D-Mace, Vingian, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingian here with you on Wednesday. Willie's Mets got the job done last night, an 8-4 win against the Milwaukee Brewers, with a chance to advance today to face the hated Philadelphia Phillies in the next round. The Atlanta Braves falling 4-0 in San Diego to fall down 1-0 in that series. And D-Mace's Tigers with a 3-1 win yesterday in the wild card round.
So everybody's feeling a little good today. Well, the exception of
Chase.
Yeah,
all of you Braves fans out there.
Jarrett. You know, Chase, they're all in the same boat.
Tough right assignment. Had to go all the way out to San Diego. San Diego is really
good. It's their fault, Willie. It's their fault. They couldn't beat your Mets.
Well, that, as it proves out, the first game was huge because that sapped the Braves of they forced the Braves to have to go after the second game. Plus, they then lost Chris Sale on top of the 15 other guys that they've had hurt this year. So the Braves have overcome a lot just to get into the playoffs. So I think the Padres had to be sitting there going, oh, Chris Sale's hurt? Oh, they lost the first game? And they got to fly all the way out here? Like Atlanta to San Diego, that's got to be a six-hour flight, right?
Yeah, it is. Well, five, yeah.
They played two games on, Monday.
Time change, everything.
Yeah. Two games, had to fly all the way out to San Diego and play last night. That's
we call
a tough
that
assignment.
A schedule loss. In
that's
sports.
A tough one. That is tough.
There was really no way the Braves would win that game. I felt considering everything that you just laid out, having to play a doubleheader on Monday, having to win the second game because you lost the first, then having to fly across the country, over three time zones, the whole thing, like. If the Braves would have won yesterday, I would have been surprised.
That would have been impressive to do that. And I also think San Diego is built for the postseason. They have a deep bullpen. They really went after it. They have a great crowd.
Their fans were into it yesterday.
No question about it. They are hungry. Man. They went for it. They traded prospects, futures, to go for it this year for rentals. So they are all in to try to win. I think they have a very, very strong roster. So that's a tough matchup for the Braves. And the other game that we didn't mention, the Royals pulled a big, not a big upset, but they got a clutch win. They beat Baltimore's best pitcher, Corbin Burnes, who pitched great, but it was a 1-0 shutout at Camden Yards. Went all the way to the last batter there. So same four games, four matchups in the same order today, although the Mets-Brewers game is staggered to a little bit later in the afternoon, 6:30, I guess you could say that's an evening game, instead of 4:30, where I was fixated on my couch from 4:30 to 7-ish, or however long it took.
And we will have coverage of three of those games today on 94.9 The Fan. Tigers at Astros at 1, coverage starts at 1, Royals and Orioles at 4, Braves at Padres at 7. So plenty of coverage of the MLB postseason here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game and 94.9 The Fan. So yesterday, Brian Callahan, before the Titans, went their separate ways for their off week, once again threw his full support behind Will Levis as the Titans' starting quarterback. Here is what Brian Callahan said yesterday when asked about Will Levis' status as starting quarterback of the Tennessee Titans.
Yes.
View of how you guys are looking at it.
Yeah, that's exactly how we look at it. And I appreciate Mason's professionalism. I appreciate how prepared he was and ready to go into the game. But Will is our starting quarterback. And I said it last night, and I'll reiterate it again, that when he's healthy, he's starting. And hopefully he's healthy for Indy, and we're ready to roll, and he's the starting quarterback because it's hard to play quarterback in the NFL, as everybody knows. There does take some development. Guys make young player mistakes. You see it all across the league right now. And we're going to find out everything about Will that we can. And he's going to continue to grow and get better and play better. He needs to play better for us. And at the end of the day, I believe that he will. And that's where I'm at with that whole thing. There's no controversy. There's no second guessing. That's what's happening. So that's probably as clear as I can state it.
Brian Callahan said there's no controversy. Mm-hmm. The question I have is, especially since I have a former NFL player sitting to my right, the Titans won a game with Mason Rudolph. It wasn't spectacular. I know that Tim Hasselbeck took umbrage with my adjective of competent to describe Mason Rudolph yesterday, and I thought competent was a perfectly adequate word. The definition having the necessary ability, knowledge, or skill to do something successfully, which is what Mason Rudolph did on Monday. No one's going to remember his performance. He didn't do anything memorable, but he steadied the offense. He was calm. He didn't flinch under pressure. So Brian Callahan can say, Will Levis is our quarterback, period, the end. But the players in the dressing room, in the locker room, how are they feeling about that right now?
Well, I think first, let's address the word competent. I think because people use it in sort of a – it's not a good way when you describe somebody. Half the time when somebody say competent, it's really not good. So I can understand why – you know, Tim was like,
Webster's dictionary defines competent.
You're right.
Sometimes it's code. It's exactly. code. Exactly. We're not super talented.
Absolutely.
And look, you can look at the Vanderbilt Media Guide
yes.
and look at the description of me. You'll see a lot of great team attitude, tough, hard-nosed competitor.
Do we have
you
any
won't
of
see,
these media
competent.
Guides?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll show them to you. But you won't see, like, super talent, you know, can jump out of the gym. Like, you know, but there's a way that a coach will describe a good, solid role player that is competent.
And I think if you use the word competent, if you go up to the podium and say, yeah, that player, he's competent, it doesn't fly well.
I could have used efficient or capable or
some other adjectives other than competent.
Steady.
But with that being said, this isn't and listen, I haven't gotten any word from anybody. I don't know, you know, what's going on, but I just feel it's not his decision to make. Again, I repeat that. It's not his decision to make, so he can't get out there and say, well, yeah, we're going to start Mason Rudolph in the next game regardless. Or it's Mason Rudolph, regardless of if we won a game or not, it's Mason Rudolph's job moving forward. That's not his decision to make. That's one person and one person solely, the owner's decision. So he's right. Will Levis is the quarterback until the owner decides that he's not the quarterback. So whatever you say, it don't mean nothing, because if the owner didn't sign off on it, then it's just words being spoken. But I'm sure the owner signed off on this one. Like, no, he's our quarterback until I say he's not our quarterback. So what is Brian Callahan to do? He's basically reiterating what the owner said. He's our quarterback moving forward. I understand what he's saying, because if you do bench him, because what helps his argument is that when Will Levis went out, Mason Rudolph came in, it wasn't like this offense all of a sudden went from the first gear to the fifth gear. It basically stayed in the first gear, maybe kind of sort of went to the second gear, but it didn't get past the second gear. So he can say that because there wasn't a drastic change in how the offense went about playing in regards to passing. Now, what helped him was, again, like I have been saying, take the ball out of your hands, give it to your running backs. Will Levis can do that too. That's why he's saying, listen, this is our quarterback moving forward. Why? Because in his mind, he can't do anything about it. But the only thing he can do about it is take the ball out of his hands and give it to the running backs. That's the only thing he can do. And I want to guarantee, but I'm not, but 90% of me believe that once they come off the bye week, you're going to see more heavy run until Will Levis can prove that he doesn't make those same type of mistakes over and over again. But the problem you may run into is if you do, you know, sort of take that game plan or that approach, if you're not winning, Those guys on the other side of the line, the defensive guys, if they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, there's going to be a divide in the locker room.
This is how I kind of see it, and this is what I would be concerned about with what you're talking about, just how the locker room receives it. It appears that the see what he's got, the Will Levis, and look, I'm not going to be two-faced about it. I kind of said you need 20 starts before you really know what you have, even though every week we have examples that kind of put it into a category of not going to be a special, not going to be a special quarterback, right? He's going to be – he's an NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
Maybe someday – maybe he'll be a 10-year backup. Maybe, Billy Volek, you can name a lot of guys who – made a long career just being a backup in the league. There's nothing wrong with that.
The guy I think of whenever I hear that is Chase Daniel. Chase Daniel made a lot.
He's the ultimate,
yeah,
right?
Chase Daniel made a lot of
money.
He's even
got commercials.
Yes. And now he's on the podcast with Diana Rossini on The Athletic. Chase Daniel made a lot of money.
Sure.
Playing very little games in the NFL.
So, but the Titans are trying to evaluate what he is. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, if this is the commitment, then what it is clearly saying now is it's more important to do that, even if you're going to lose more games than you would if you had Rudolph in, right? Like I think if you did a vote of the team, said who gives us the best chance to win the next game, I don't think it would be even close, right? Based on how Levis has played and what it looked like with Rudolph in there. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think it would be a landslide.
In favor
of Rudolph. Yeah, for the next game, just forget it. Just say, who gives us the best chance to beat the Colts and get to 2-3? And if you're a pro, where most guys go year to year, not much is guaranteed for a high percentage of the roster, right? Mm-hmm. For half of the roster, it's like next week isn't guaranteed, right? You could get cut. If you get hurt, you don't know if that's your last game. So I think you're thinking, I don't want to give up on the season and just say it's a tryout for Will Levis. That's a tough place to be in. So I think overall it's a very difficult dilemma to be in, especially the way it's trending for Will Levis. But I understand what they're doing. They have decided that this is an exploratory year. And once again, I've used that term that's probably what they should do this year, is not really worry about wins and losses and just identify who are players that we're going to build around for the next 2 or 3 years as we get going towards the new season. But that doesn't make it easy for the guys in the locker room.
My question for Derek is, imagine you're sitting in that meeting room. Mm-hmm. Brian Callahan comes in. You just won your first game. And Brian Callahan says to all of you what he said in that clip. What are the players thinking? What's going through your mind if you were in that situation?
All right. That's what I'm thinking. Like, okay, let's roll with them. But you know that eventually there's going to come a tipping point. There's going to come a point within a season where, we are in agreement with you as players. Like, okay, if this is what you want to do, we're going to back you. We're just going to go out and practice hard and do our job, not worry about, the quarterback and his job, what he has to do, because it's a tall task being a starting NFL quarterback in this league. But as players, outside of the quarterback position, it's like, okay, this is what the coach wants. I just got to go out and do my job. But then if it appears that the quarterback isn't getting any better, now you run the risk of losing the locker room, because we stood with you when you came out and you vehemently said, he's our quarterback, damn it. We ain't going nowhere. We ain't going to Mason Rudolph. Mason Rudolph's a pro. He did what we asked him to do. With little time to prepare, he came in and stabilized it and won the game for us. But Will Levis is our quarterback. Make no mistake about it. All right, coach, we're going to roll with it. But if he ain't winning after a game or two, now we're looking and saying, okay, so you're going to sacrifice us for him. Because that's essentially what you're doing. If Will Levis comes back and it doesn't look any different, you're sacrificing the team for that guy. And you know why you're sacrificing the team for that guy? Because that guy is the owner's guy. So now you got to go up to the owner like, listen, first you got to go to Rand. Like, we got to do something here. And then Rand needs to go to the owner like, hey, listen, We know what I know what you said, but there's some rumblings down in that locker room. He ain't won no games, and these guys are starting to we're starting to lose a few of these players. So we got to make a decision. So you can't let this go on, because my thing is, yeah, you came out and you said he's our quarterback, but nobody asked a follow-up question. For how long? What is it going to take for him not to be the quarterback? Because if you're just screaming, oh, he's our quarterback, we're going to give him time to process all this and figure it out. Well, how much time is too much time? Because if you're going to give him the whole season, you're sacrificing all these other guys. You're sacrificing a Calvin Ridley that came here banking on having a good offense. You sacrificing Tyler Boyd. You're sacrificing Pollard. You're sacrificing Sweat, who you drafted. You're sacrificing all these guys that are playing good football. And if your quarterback is the only guy that is holding you back, but you say, this is my guy, well, how long is he your guy before you lose the locker room?
This is another thing I have thought about, too, is, okay, you're going to start him in the next game. But does it get to a point where there is more of a quick hook, especially while you still at least are trying to keep the locker room engaged, keep the games meaningful, and proceed after just 4 weeks, rather than just say every game from here on out is basically an exhibition game and we're just going to keep Levis out there, good or bad, and just let him sink or swim. I thought about this. I introduced this to you yesterday, D-Mace. I think back to a Don Shula team in the pre-Dan Marino era. Remember, Dan Marino was the last pick in the first round. So that means that the Dolphins went to the Super Bowl the year before they got Dan Marino. And they had basically for a couple years, and there were some very good teams. I grew up watching them a lot because I watched the Jets all the time battle them, some good Jets teams. But they had a tandem. They had David Woodley, who was a little bit like the Will Levis, a talented athlete who ran hot and cold. And, you know, so far, Levis hasn't gotten to the level of Woodley. But Woodley was, when he was on, very streaky and could get to a pretty good level at quarterback. But there was a reason they drafted Dan Marino, right? He wasn't great, but he was good enough to win a lot of games because he had great defense. But he could go cold. And Don Shula, back then, would use a quick hook, and he would go to a guy named Don Strock, who was a veteran guy, kind of like Mason Rudolph, who was more the steady presence, decent passer, knew what the offense was, and 5 or 6 times per year, if you take a look at the stats in 81 and 82, 82 was a strike year, so then he played 9 games, but he would go to him. And maybe the most famous example is one of the greatest games ever played was in the 1981 division playoffs. You've seen a lot. Remember the old hook and lateral? There was a great comeback that the Dolphins had at the Orange Bowl against Dan Fouts and the Chargers. It was a divisional game. But it always comes up on NFL's greatest games. But that was a game where Woodley struggled. They fell behind. They went to Strock, and Strock kind of led them back, and it was a great game. The Chargers ended up winning. But I just think of maybe you can think outside the box a little bit and say, okay, Levis, let's raise the bar a little bit and not say, regardless, if you're healthy, you're in there. But how about you're in there, but if you make a bonehead mistake early in the game like last night, I'm gonna have a quicker hook. I know what Mason Rudolph can do, and we're still trying to win games. I just wonder about philosophies that aren't just as defined as he's the starter as long as he's healthy.
Well, and then it falls back into this. If Will Levis is not playing well, then who's not playing well? The receivers. Well,
right.
It appears that
that it infiltrates your whole team.
Exactly. It appears that the receivers are not playing well, or the perception is, oh, look at the tight receivers. They're not playing well. Well, in actuality, they're not even getting the opportunity to play well, to play bad or good because of the quarterback. And then players start thinking about that, because what happens is everybody starts to now, those tentacles start to go out to everybody. Oh, he's playing bad. Why did they sign Calvin Ridley? Why did they sign that guy? He's not doing anything. But it all comes back to the central question or the simple central thing, the quarterback. That's what it comes back to. And if you keep hold of him too long or you keep him in that starting position and he's not doing the things that a starting quarterback, a winning starting quarterback is supposed to do, then what you run the risk of, again, is guys being blamed that shouldn't be blamed. And then when that happens, you start to lose the locker room because now they're upset and they can't say anything about the quarterback because you don't want to throw the quarterback under the bus. But now you start hearing these cryptic things come out from players, or you start hearing things come out of the locker room that is not beneficial to the locker room.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I just want to do a simple straw poll here with our listeners. If it were up to you, who would be the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Titans? Will Levis or Mason Rudolph? You can text, you can call 615-737-1025. I just want to get a sense of where our listeners are and Titans fans are. So just text us, call us, let us know who is the starting quarterback if you were in charge of this decision. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.
And they're still undergoing tests, still trying to figure out how serious this injury is. It doesn't sound overly serious, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be able to play. It's not next week because they have a bye, but the following week. So still trying to figure out when Will Levis is going to be 100% and on the field. But they were very clear. Brian Callahan was clear last night and again today that Will Levis is his starter 100%. It was really fascinating last night what was going on. One, Levis had his helmet on, an indication he wanted to go in. Two, the coaching staff and the medical staff were like, we are not risking this at all. Plus, when a guy is out there not 100%, you're not going to see 100% of his performance. It's going to be less. And then you do wonder, was part of it like, you know what? Maybe if we see Mason Rudolph, who is totally fine, maybe if you see Mason Rudolph, like, that'd be interesting. Maybe they just wanted to see it. All of that happened last night with the Titans running the heck out of the ball and looking really good in the run game, not making a ton of mistakes and getting their first win. We will see how this goes from here. Yes, it is clear that Levis is their starter when healthy. It's just not absolutely clear when that's going to be.
That was Ian Rappaport, NFL Network insider, this morning sharing some insight on the Titans quarterback situation. D-Mays, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Before the break, I said, let's do a straw poll. If it were up to you, who would be the Titans starting quarterback? I'm going to run through many texts that we received. Rudolph, one. As of right now, what I've seen, Mason Rudolph, hands down, would be my starting quarterback. Another one for Rudolph. Andrew, I would rather lose with Levis than win with Rudolph throwing for 83 yards. It's not helping long term. Ron, let's see. Ron, as much as I want Levis to be that guy, Levis is not that guy. I've seen enough. But let him finish the season. I don't need Rudolph ruining my chances for a high pick. Sink or swim with Levis. A vote for Rudolph. A vote for Levis. The offensive line has been an issue for years. Lipstick on a pig is still a pig. Mitch in Bellevue says, I don't even care who it is anymore.
Nah, that's what you don't want.
You do need a quarterback, Mitch. Levis, another vote for Levis. It either works out or you get a better draft pick. Rudolph gets you to a 500 season. Another from Michael, Will Levis, no question. I'd rather get the 60-yard touchdown passes mixed in with the pick sixes than have to watch Mason Rudolph every week. So boring, our friend Gover says, and this is an interesting one. I'd play it like a hockey lineup, situational. Against the lowly Colts, Levis. Against the Bills when you can't afford mistakes, Rudolph. So it's
a mixed bag.
It's a mixed bag, and then one more on our text line. Rudolph. Not just because he won the last game. Look at his history with the Steelers. He is solid and better than Levis. Titans would have a good chance of being 2-2 if Rudolph started game 3. Why not give the team and the fans some hope at winning? So that really is it. There are fans who want to go with Rudolph because they want to watch a winning product. Mm-hmm. I get it. You are a fan of a team. You don't want to watch your team lose. But then the flip side of the coin, which is the one that I'm on personally, is I throw Levis out there. And if he stinks, he stinks. And if you finish 3-14, you're drafting his successor at the top of the draft.
But see, here's and listen, I would prescribe that under any other circumstance, but under where we're at now, and you know, you have three teams in your division that seem like they have their quarterback, even though Lawrence is not playing well. You know, you don't know what's going on with that. They're going to fire Peterson before they get rid of Lawrence. They just signed that huge contract. Anthony Richardson, he's up and down. He's more down than up, but people believe in the upside. And then, obviously, C.J. Stroud, what he's been able to do speaks for itself. So under any other circumstance, I understand what you're saying, Adam. But in this one, because these other teams seem to have their quarterback, along with a lot of other teams in the AFC, you are the only team. You are one of few teams that are sitting here like, okay, what do we do? Do we pull our quarterback? Do we keep him in there? Because we want to see if he can really play. But the problem with seeing if he really can play, and I've said this before, it's you run the risk of losing everybody else. You're cutting off your nose to spite your face. It's like you got to figure out a happy medium in all of this. If you want to keep Will Levis as your starting quarterback, then do what I said do. Give it to the running back. You can mask a lot of it, a lot of his deficiencies if you turn around and give it to the quarterback. It's been done numerous of times with quarterbacks throughout the NFL history. When they're not ready, we turn the ball around. If we got a competent running back, let me not use that word. If we have a
– nothing wrong with that word. I'm just saying.
If we have a running back that can get the job done, then turn around and give it to him. It takes the stress off of the quarterback. And then your fan base is not looking at you like, hey, listen, we've seen enough of this quarterback. When you going to make the change? I heard Big Joe and Chase saying, hey, leave him in there. If he throw for five interceptions, so be it. I understand what y'all saying, but y'all not giving a caveat that he can lose the team too. You put him in there and he throws three or four touchdowns and you trot him out there the next game and he throws another two and you trot him out there again. There ain't going to be nobody trotting behind him. There's not, because the team's going to be gone. Mentally, they're going to be gone. So you got to make – you have – if you're going to do it, if you're going to seriously stick with Will Levis, which I think they will do, then you have to have a plan of we're just going to take the ball out of his hands and we're going to give it to the running back. I think that's the only way this thing works until Will Levis figures out those things that he needs to figure out. Stop turning over the football, and it's not just – it's not just turnovers. It's dumb turnovers. Like things you should already know as a starting quarterback in this league. And I don't give a damn if you played 14 damn games. You should know not to throw the ball to the defensive lineman that's sitting there. You should know not to flick the ball to the sideline thinking you're going to get it out of bounds. You should know not to flick it behind you trying to get it to the running back when you're going to the ground. You should know not to throw it to the wide side of the field or to the boundary when the corner is sitting inside. These are things you should know. People, stop saying that he's only played this many games.
I still see the craziness of the football mentality of it's got to be A or B and there's no nuance. In not any other sport, but in hockey and baseball, it would be very simple. Send them back to the minors. Let's go work on some stuff. And bring him back when he's ready.
Giving it to the running back, he is sending him back to the minors.
Yeah, but it's still a very different thing. Because you don't want him ultimately just to be a guy that is a game manager. You want him to get the most out of his talent.
Can we bring back NFL Europe? Can we do that?
Well, but football's too stupid to do that. Yeah. They are. The NFL is too cheap and
they
too
need
stupid.
They need a feeder
They want all
system.
The money.
They need a feeder system.
Yes, they need a developmental system for quarterbacks, and they're too stupid to figure out how to do it. So instead, you have this. And there's no nuance. So I think a nuanced approach is a better one. And part of the equation is what you said. Simplify it. Mm-hmm. Let's say, how good is the defense? And can we win by just sort of doing, as long as you can hang in the game and not get way behind, you can play like that. Play field position. You got a good kicker. Mm-hmm. You supposedly have a good punter. I don't know what's going on with the punting game. It's awful. They've got to figure that out if they're going to play that way, because that is a big part of that equation. If you're going to play field position, you better be able to punt it. Mm-hmm. But be more patient. Simplify things. But I also think things like a quick hook or let him sit for a couple games. Watch how a veteran quarterback manages a game. See if you can learn from that kind of stuff. But It's got to be all or nothing. I kind of don't like the all or nothing. I think there's a better solution here.
Kyle is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, with his take on Levis versus Rudolph. Kyle, go ahead.
Hey, guys. I would like to take this 2 weeks that we have from the bye week and prepping up for the Colts. I'd like to see Rudolph get out there, get acclimated with our starting receivers, and I think he could be, you know, in the Tannehill-Mariota case. Not to say that I've given up completely on Levis, but I think Rudolph has the talent, the traits, and experience to get this team back on track, and who knows, maybe a playoff run, because Tannehill, he took us from 2-4 and got us in there. We had Henry run like a monster, but we got weapons all around, so what do y'all think about that?
It's a good point. We've seen that happen. Tannehill definitely was a stroke of genius, a great move by John Robinson. And Kerry Collins also bailed out a failing, flailing Vince Young once upon a time. The difference is I don't see Mason Rudolph as that kind of talent. Kerry Collins and Ryan Tannehill were first-round talents, right? Mm-hmm. I think they had more tools, even though they weren't super successful in their previous spot, right? They were available on the cheap, and they turned out to bounce back very well with the Titans. Rudolph, I don't think that has that kind of ceiling.
He was a third-round pick.
Yeah, well, you can tell. He doesn't have a rocket of an arm, but he's limited what he can do. But he is right now a good stabilizing presence.
Yeah, he is. And again, if indeed the Titans want to stick with Will Levis, and I'm not saying giving him the hook or anything else, but if indeed you want to stay with Will Levis, then you have to scale down your approach offensively until he proves to you that he can get the job done. It's okay to do that. I know we're in a world right now where it's instant. You got to have that instant gratification and everything. Especially when it comes to quarterback, it's like you got to see a guy. Well, if that is indeed the case, then he's not there yet. And if you want him to remain your quarterback, then help him help himself, which is take the ball out of his hands. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't care if they brought in Ridley and all these other guys. It doesn't matter. Do you want to win football games and let this young man develop, or do you want to, you know, just play with the toys that you have, the Ridleys and the Hopkins and the Boyd, and try to get them the football all to the detriment of your quarterback?
Let me ask you this, D-Base. He brought up the reps at practice, and that is an interesting thing. Like, if you were to go to Rudolph, it would make sense to give him the reps with practice. And then that is another way that Will Levis does not develop. That's another thing that would lead you to, if you go with your theory of once you go to Rudolph, it's hard to go back. And that's one of the things that happens.
Yeah, it is. And it's hard to, if you're going to stick with Will Levis, it's hard to give Mason Rudolph reps in practice like that, because you want your starting quarterback to get 90-something% of the reps. You had a backup and get a few, but for the majority of the reps, the plays you want to run in a game, it's the starting quarterback that is running them. So to have a practice, maybe you can do it this week. I know they may be off the whole week. I think the new rules, they're off damn near the whole week, so you're not even getting that time to sort of figure out, okay, how can we give Mason Rudolph some reps, all while not trying to, you know, diminish Will Levis's role as our starting quarterback. Well, back in the day, you can do it during a bye week because you had to practice all the way up to a Thursday or Friday, so you had 3 or 4 days to do that. I'm not sure if you have that now. With the new collective bargain, I think these guys got to be off for the majority of the week. So you can't even implement what you probably want to, as far as, okay, let's give Mason some of these reps because this week is a bye week and we don't have to really stress it and we're not game planning. So let's just put Mason in for a while. You can't even do that now because they're not even on the field.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your calls and text in the next segment. Tune into 102.5, 106.3, The Game this Saturday at 11 a.m. for our college football game of the week, Missouri versus Texas A&M, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports. D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, continuing to take your calls and texts on Will Levis and Mason Rudolph on our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris, Titans and True wants to share his thoughts. Chris, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everybody. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Doing good.
And so, D-Bays, I hear you, and I'm with you, actually, on this. I think we've seen enough of Will Levis to know he's not the guy. Just like Stephen A. Smith calls the Cowboys the accident waiting to happen, Will Levis is the mistake waiting to happen. He's turned over the ball 9 times in 4 games. He's either taken points off your board or he's given the team points. Mason Rudolph has done 2 things Will Levis hasn't done: help the team win and not turn the ball over so far. I'm thinking it's the obvious choice, and I know a lot of people, a lot of other media members will say, you got to stick with Levis and see what the team, what you have in him. But are you willing to do that at the detriment of costing your team? I'm like, you stick with what's working. Right now, Mason Rudolph is what's working. Obviously, it was a little boring, and he hasn't had many reps, but you got to stick with Mason Rudolph. He's at least gotten you to where Will Levis hasn't, and that was your victory. What do you want, wins or a high draft pick?
Thanks, Chris.
I mean, I think I think
that's an essential question. Yeah. What's the ceiling? Is it worth something to you to try to compete to get to 9-8? Because to be 9-8 from here on out, they would have to go 8-5 from on the remaining schedule. And 9-8 is maybe 30-40% chance of making the playoffs. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen the Titans' schedule after their game against the Colts?
I think that's why I'm asking the question. Chris is like, who gives us a chance to win? Let's go week to week. I want to be entertained. I want to go into the game with my team having a chance to win. And I think the locker room would say that. I think the fans would say that. But that is not a long-term look. I think Rand Carthon especially, has to be thinking short-term and long-term.
Well, in theory, that does work. And listen, I agree with it in principle, because it's like, you know, that's something that baseball could do. You know, just pitchers in and out,
right.
Knowing where you're at in the innings, you could pull pitchers in and out. You could do it in maybe basketball, pulling guys in and out. But in football, you can't do it. It's like hockey. You can't continue to swap the goalies unless you have 2 really good goalies, and then you can do it. But if you don't have really 2 really good goalies and you're trying to figure things out, it puts stress on the other guys in that room. Because if you're trying to figure out who's the guy, and every week you're putting one guy in, then you're putting the other guy in, then you put – as a receiver, as an offensive line, we can't get used to – you haven't gotten us used
That's
to one guy, you know.
That's
so
a good point.
In theory, that it sounds good, but in actuality, it doesn't work, because I have to get on the same page with the quarterback.
And cadence.
The cadence and everything else. So, yeah, we can kind of do that maybe once in a season, possibly even twice. But
the Woodley Strock thing.
Exactly.
We can't keep going back and forth,
especially not in today's football. We can't keep going back and forth, because as a receiver, I want to know there is some stability at that position. Like, even if that guy's playing bad, I at least know who's going to be my quarterback and what I expect. But if it's the back and forth, and it may be helping the team in a sense, but for a lot of these players, it's like, well, I just got used to that guy. Now you're putting this guy in. I got to figure this out.
What I appreciate about working with Derek now is I get the player's perspective that I otherwise would not have, because it's easy for me as someone on the outside to say, let me rephrase it this way. There was something I used to say about the Predators near the end of the David Poile era, before Barry Trotz came in, became GM. The Predators are not going to get better until they allow themselves to get worse. I used to say that all the time near the end of the David Poile era. Now, to the Predators' credit, Barry Trotz has been able to improve the team without taking that drastic step. But you know, I feel like it's more of the exception than the rule to be able to do that.
And to David Poile's credit, he did break it down quick and trade four veteran guys, and that sped up what they were able to do.
I guess I should clarify more toward the end when it clearly wasn't working with Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson and guys like that. It felt like David Poile was holding on hope that if the Predators make the playoffs, anything could happen. I don't know this. Maybe the two of you do. How many times has the seventh seed in the NFL playoffs, either in the NFC or the AFC, won a playoff game?
Well, the Giants famously at 9-7 won the Super Bowl.
They won the Super Bowl twice, and
they beat the Patriots twice in the Super Bowl. Once they were 9-7. I think that was the year that the Patriots were undefeated. I'd have to go back and look.
But it's rare. It's rare.
I don't think it's rare that you win a playoff game. It's rare that you go deep in the playoffs. The Titans in 2019 were 9-7,
and they
went to
AFC Championship
the AFC Championship game and were right in there leading at 1.17-7, if I recall correctly, at Arrowhead. Like, they were on a roll. But I don't think you have that kind of team this year. But what is it worth to the franchise? I think that is an Amy Adams strunk question. As you try to hash this out, these are the kind of things I would be asking if I'm Rand Carthon with her, Brian Callahan with her, to say, you know, and I'm assessing all of these things we're going through. That's why I like this discussion. We're not just giving hot takes. We're giving, if you go this way, these are the things you have to think about.
Right. My question is, if Mason Rudolph starts at quarterback and the Titans win the majority of the remaining games, by the way, those games after the Colts game, at Buffalo, at Detroit. So talking, you know.
No, tough.
It's going to be tough. But let's just say, for the sake of this argument, the Titans finish 8-9, and they somehow sneak into that seventh spot.
Eight and nine's not going to do it.
Okay, let's say 9-8. Gets them into the seventh spot in the AFC playoffs. Who's going to be, they're going to play the second seed, right? Because the first seed gets a bye. So they're going to play the second seed. Let's say that's Buffalo. Do you think the Titans have any chance of going to Buffalo with Mason Rudolph at quarterback and winning a playoff game?
Mason Rudolph went to Buffalo last year.
It did not work out well.
He played well, but they got beat.
Yeah, right. They got beat pretty bad. The organization needs to figure out whether it's more valuable to them to attempt to win, maybe make the playoffs. Again, it's a pipe dream, but for the sake of this argument, maybe contend for a playoff spot and go from there. I feel like, if maybe I'm extreme in this, I'm one of those people that's like, if your team is not a legitimate contender, and this is another Predators thing we've talked about,
no question,
Willie, in the past. I think we've had this argument. Please correct me if I have your position incorrect. In your opinion, a contender in the Stanley Cup playoffs, hey, if a team makes the playoffs, they're probably a contender.
I think with some exceptions.
With some exceptions.
Like Washington last year. They got in. It was a great, but they statistically, they were not, they were way over their heads.
Right.
When you have a difference-making goalie, I think that's the kind of thing. Baseball the same way. I think if you have great pitchers that get hot, you can be a surprising contender even without a great regular season record.
Barry Trotz said at the start of training camp that he doesn't just want the Predators to make the playoffs. He wants them to make the playoffs and be a threat. Emphasis on the word threat.
You feel like you have more ways of beating somebody in a playoff
series. My definition of a contender, a championship contender, is looking at a team and saying that team has a legitimate chance of winning a championship. Not a team that could win a championship if certain things break their way. A team that is built to win a championship now. And if you are not one of those teams, I think you should be looking into the future and not trying to sneak your way into the postseason. And that's why I am, and I hear everything that Derek is saying, and I respect his opinion because he was in those locker rooms. It's easy for me to say all of this. He lived it. But I am of the mind that if Will Levis, if you want, you need to put Will Levis out there. Even if your mind is made up, Will Levis is probably not going to be, at least in Tennessee. We've seen examples of quarterbacks going elsewhere. We're seeing it right now with Sam Darnold, with Baker Mayfield, with Geno Smith. Maybe Will Levis becomes that guy one day. It's probably not going to happen here. But either way, you put him out there because if he loses, you're hopefully setting up your franchise to take that step by finding someone who could hopefully do the things that Will Levis is unable to do.
Yeah, and again, I get what y'all are saying, and I understand it, but the reality is if you do that, you run the risk of losing your locker room, because what you can't do is go in individually, bring in, especially the guys that you brought in here, because Pollard came, Ridley came, you know, Boyd came, especially Boyd. These guys came here, Sneed, Cheeto, these guys came here, why? Because you presented it as, this is a franchise that can win this year. We have a young quarterback that we believe can win this year. So if you told all those guys, and plus gave them the money, Cushenberry as well, let me not leave out Cushenberry. God, I can't do that. But Cushenberry as well, you promised them. There are things that you promised them, not opposite of, you know, aside from money. There are things that you promised them. Like, listen, we got a team. We just need you. We got a team. We got a young quarterback. We got an offensive-minded head coach. We got it. We're ready to go. So you promised these guys these things. And if you then go in there and you stick with a quarterback that isn't getting the job done, now these guys are looking at you like, you told us, like, help us, because you told us something that isn't coming true. But yet and still, you're sticking with the guy that you told him was going to be the savior of this franchise. And he's not. So you got to make a move, because you told us it was going to be different. And if you don't make that move, again, I'm not saying 100% you're going to lose the locker room, but damn it, it's going to be close. You run the risk. And that's the last thing you want to do as an organization, is for those guys in the locker room to be pointing their fingers at you. Head coach, at you, GM, and at you, owner.
615-737-1025. We'll get Jonathan Hutton's thoughts on all of this. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.